I'm cold, so I wanted more heat. So I turned those lights. I'm kidding. Yeah. So I'm getting old. I can't see as well, so the lights help me be able to read, not because I want to be in a spotlight or anything. But Jeffrey has been ill, so you get the substitute. So, surprise. So thank you to those that had to shuffle some things around. Alan, for doing call to worship, and thank you, Brad, for the shuffling with the slides. So, everybody's good when everything runs smoothly, and then when something doesn't pop up, everybody's like, what's going on? So it's a lot of pressure being in the back, even though it's the back. And so thank you, Brad, for accommodating everything going on. When I was 16 years old, I was driving my grandmother's car with my sister on the way home from town, and the entry to our neighborhood was on a hill. And I was going to make a left-hand turn into that neighborhood and was turning too soon and did not see the oncoming car on the other side of the hill. And as I turned, that car popped the hill and broadsided us. And a family of four, who fortunately were not speeding, and some had to go to the hospital and some were injured, but thankfully it wasn't anything life-threatening. And it certainly made an impact on me. The realization of how bad that could have been. And you know, I certainly pay attention when making left-hand turns and certainly on hills. But shortly after that, an older gentleman from the congregation that we attended came to visit me. His name was Don. And Don was, you know, a little bit older than my parents, and so not in my age range, but came to the house, and incidentally, I had been sick for a long time as well. So I'd been sick and been in a car accident and, you know, hurt my sister, and, you know, so wasn't a good month for me. But he came and he sat, and he didn't give me lectures on driving. He didn't give me a speech on paying attention or any of those kinds of things. He came and he sat and he talked to me. He just talked. He talked and he laughed and he listened, and it made an impact on me. And years later, actually just a couple of years ago, I crossed paths with him again, and I said to him about the event, and he didn't even remember. He didn't remember coming out, but I explained to him the circumstance again and told him that I really appreciated that and that I remember him coming out, and he was glad that he did something positive. You see, you never know what little thing you might do that could make a powerful impact on someone around you. And this morning we're going to talk about a man named Onesiphorus. I don't know if you have come across Onesiphorus. He's only mentioned in a couple of verses in 2 Timothy, and we'll get there in a moment, but I want to set a little bit of context to the study. You see, Paul writes 2 Timothy from prison. And he also writes the book of Philippians from prison. And if you would, turn to Philippians chapter 1. We're going to have the hard conversation first, so we can end on a good note, so at least understand that it'll get better. But here's the hard conversation, because the context that Paul is in, being in prison, From Acts and historical documents, we see and understand that Paul makes it to Rome. He's going to go through trials in Rome, and he's in house arrest. He gets released from house arrest. He again gets arrested and goes back to prison. So the first time is house arrest. It's a little more comfortable. The second time, it's a dungy, dirty, cold prison cell. And he makes reference to this in the book of Timothy as it refers to his chains. But shortly before writing Timothy, he writes Philippians. And in fact, scholars believe that the second writing to Timothy is his last writing. But shortly before that, we see and understand that Paul sees and understands this is the end of his life. He's nearing death. And that's how he writes to Timothy in the encouragement and for him to pick up the torch and run with sharing the gospel. But Paul knows that he's near the end, and it seems that Philippians just a shortly time before writing to Timothy. So the question is, what do you do when nearing death? And real, even more poignantly, where are you going after you die? Have you considered that? And I'm not asking for an answer out loud. We could be here. I mean, we can discuss it later if you'd like. But if you haven't answered that question, you should. And you could ignore it. And we could talk about the circumstances of life and the frailties of life and looking at death. We could bring out statistics and talk about the chances of you dying in a car accident or the odds of dying from a disease. We could look at the media and see the shootings, the mass shootings. We can see war. We can see the frailties of our societies. And we can talk about those things. But I'll give you one statistic. 100% of all life ends in death. Unless you're alive when the Lord comes, outside of that exception, 100% of everyone who has ever lived has died. 100% of everyone who ever is, or everyone who is living now will die. You will die. And then what happens? There's three good questions to ask yourself. What happens to me after I die? What's the meaning to life? And where did it all come from? And I think they're interrelated. So if you answer one, you can get the answers to the others. And you can ignore these questions. You can. But again, you have to deal with the statistic of that's where you will end. And you can be as rich as Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and what's his name for Microsoft? Can't believe I forgot his name now. But, you know, yeah, Bill Gates. You know, you can have all the money of these guys. You can have whatever luxuries in life you want. None of that goes with you. And so what do you do with death? Where will you go when you die? Paul writes to the Philippians in Philippians chapter 1 and starting at verse 18. What then, only in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed. And in this I rejoice. Yes, I will rejoice. For I know that this shall turn out for my deliverance through your prayers and the provisions of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, according to my earnest expectation and hope, that I shall not be put to shame in anything, but that in the boldness of Christ shall even now, as always, be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I am to live on in the flesh, this will mean fruitful labor for me, and I do not know which to choose, but I am hard pressed from both directions, having the desire to depart and be with Christ, for that is much better. Yet to remain on in the flesh is more necessary for your sake. So Philippians is a very positive book, and it gets a little darker, a little more real when it gets to Timothy. But right now he's speaking in relationship to the furthering of the gospel of Jesus, and that's been his calling since being converted. And I want you to see in verse 18, he speaks in regard, you can back up and see that he's talking about making sure that the gospel gets proclaimed. And that's the what then at the start of the verse, but that Christ gets proclaimed. He wants that to continue. And in verse 20, he says, Christ shall even now as always be exalted. Paul had a relationship with Jesus. Paul's life was about proclaiming Jesus. Paul's life was about exalting Jesus. Paul's life was meant something being in Jesus. That's the meaning. That's the meaning to our existence, is our relationship with God, our relationship with Jesus. Everything else fails in comparison. And so we understand that God, that's where it all comes from. Paul then explains that to live is Christ in verse 21. And so you can see when he says, for me to live is Christ, is because I am about proclaiming Jesus. I'm about exalting Jesus. I'm about having a relationship with Jesus. I'm about that relationship. And so if I'm going to keep on living, I'm going to keep on having this relationship with Jesus. But if I die because of my relationship with Jesus, I'm still good. And so I don't know if death scares you, but if you have a relationship with God, If you have that relationship with Jesus, death is a passage to a better room, to a better place. The same way that if you go from this room through that door down the steps to the outside, is the same way that if you go from life through the door to a better place. But without God, it's not. Without God, the passageway through the door is not to a better place. It's to hell, which has been prepared for Satan and his angels. And so I know that's not a warm fuzzy. And we like warm fuzzies. We don't like the uncomfortable. We don't like the disturbing. But Paul's proclamation was about Jesus. Paul's exalting was about Jesus. And so Paul facing death was not an issue. And so we want our life to be about facing death not being an issue. And while we're here on this earth, influencing people in a positive way, even with the little stuff. Simple conversations. And so we come to Onesiphorus and go to 2 Timothy chapter 1. And again, remember, he's writing from prison. The last book that he'll write, knowing that he's facing death, he writes to Timothy chapter 1 and starting at verse 16, "The Lord grant mercy to the house of Onesiphorus, for he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. But when he was in Rome, he eagerly searched for and found me. The Lord grant to him to find mercy from the Lord on that day. And you know very well what services he rendered at Ephesus." Notice in verse 6, this is the only time he's mentioned except later in the book where Paul says that he wishes Timothy to give a greeting to the household of Onesiphorus. But this is the only time he's mentioned in Scripture. But if you're going to be mentioned and remembered in life, don't you want it to be in a positive context? Don't you want it to be in a circumstance like this where the Apostle Paul is mentioning in verse 16 that he often refreshed him? So I don't know how often or all of what the refreshing was, but we know that it was enough of a circumstance that it hit Paul, it meant something to Paul, that he mentions to Timothy, that he often did that. Turn over, and we'll come back to Timothy, but turn over to Hebrews chapter 10. So just pass Timothy to the book of Hebrews chapter 10. Because I like the idea of refreshing. You like that, especially when it's hot, right? The idea of jumping in a pool to cool off is refreshing, or getting a cold drink is refreshing. So isn't it nice to think about being a refreshing person? Are you a refreshing person? Or are you miserable to be around? Noah, you are a refreshing person. Or are you miserable to be around? And if you don't know the answer to that, maybe that's your answer. Hebrews chapter 10, starting at verse 19. "Since therefore, brethren, we have confidence to enter the holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way, which he inaugurated for us through the veil, that is his flesh." Hold on, I wanted to make sure I was in the right spot. I am, okay. That is his flesh. Verse 21, "And since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a sincere heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembly together as is the habit of some, but encourage one another all the more as you see the day drawing near." How can you be a refreshing person? I think we have some insight here on how you can be a refreshing person. And understand that part of the context of what the Hebrew writer is saying is that you get to enter into the presence of God when he talks about the holy place and the veil. In the temple, that Holy of Holies is where the Ark of Covenant sat. It was where the presence of God was. And one person once a year got to enter there, the high priest. You see, the layman, the everyday person didn't get to go into there. Didn't get to go into the presence of God. And all throughout the Old Testament, we see miracles. We see God interacting with people. But if you take a step back from that and see the scope of the number of years that God is working with man and the handful of people that he's doing it with, the vast majority of people did not get that interaction with God. Does that make sense? Not everybody's Moses. They saw the result of Moses' interaction with God. But a lot of times their interaction was they were standing at the foot of the mountain not being able to go on. They were standing outside the temple not being able to go in. You get to be in the presence of God. As you understand your relationship with Christ and what it means to be alive with Christ, you get to see and understand that what God has done is taken us as mankind from arm's length. Because of sin, because of us straying away from Him, what God has done has brought us into His presence. Because you and I can't do it. Mankind didn't wake up one day and say, you know what, we need a redeeming sacrifice. We need a way back to God. Man can't do it. What God did was determine a plan to send Jesus into the world to pay the debt that you owe. To pay the debt that you can't pay. To redeem the sin that you can't take away. And I can't take away. God gave us Jesus to get us back to Him. And in the Holy of Holies, we stand. So as we sit in an air-conditioned building in the comfortable pews, we get to stand in the presence of God. So the Hebrew writer says, take that. And understand, since therefore, verse 19, we have confidence to enter the Holy of Holies. He says in verse 22, let us draw near with a sincere heart. Here's how you can begin to be a refreshing person. Draw near to God. Because people will disappoint you. God won't. But if you are sincere in drawing near to God, you will have that nourishment that you need. As you sit and understand and see and comprehend that being in His presence, having the debt paid, having that redeeming sacrifice, those positive, holy, righteous, godly things that bring us that meaning, we draw near to that. He says in verse 23, hold fast. Hold fast to the confession. Hold fast to this fact. Hold fast to the understanding that God has brought me into His presence. And while people will disappoint, while I may disappoint you, I still want to work to be a refreshing person because I want to work and bring what I see and understand in my relationship with God and share that to you, share that with you, share that to those around me. And so, we work to be a refreshing person holding fast to our confession. And finally, in verse 25, be a refreshing person not forsaking our assembly. We use that sometimes in the context of you need to be here. And that's true. And look, people get sick and people got to work. And so it doesn't mean you're going to hell if you don't show up every time we meet. But relationships are important. And God knew that. God knew that to sit at home by yourself is not going to be as meaningful as getting together with other people. God knew that being able to have an open and honest conversation about what it means to tackle death is better than sitting at home and dwelling on it by yourself. God saw and understood that seeing love and kindness and graciousness between one another helped manifest what He's given us. God knew that we needed each other. And so He instituted a command to take the Lord's Supper to remember Him. And we see the examples of those in the New Testament gathering together on the first day of the week because God knew that we're people. And then we get discouraged and we have weak times and that we need refreshed. And so the point of getting together to worship Him is to worship together with each other. To understand not forsaking, you can also understand means stay put. If you forsake something, you leave it. You get away from it. And so to not forsake one another means to be staying put with one another. And don't underestimate the simplicity of an encouraging word and take for granted who it is you're giving that encouraging word to. Just because they're elders doesn't mean they don't need encouragement. Just because they're the wives of the elders doesn't mean they don't need encouragement. Just because he's the preacher doesn't mean Jeffrey doesn't need encouragement or that Carrie doesn't need encouragement. Just because I'm standing up here I don't need encouragement. Because life happens. And life is hard. And we understand that. And we can spend a lot of time inundating ourselves with the negativity of the society and the world around us. Or we can draw near to God. We can hold fast to our relationship with Him, and we can stay put in our relationship with one another and with Him. Back to the text in Timothy, you see, I think Onesiphorus saw and understood that. And this is the Apostle Paul we're talking about. You would think, well, if anyone didn't need refreshed, it was Paul. He's sitting in a prison cell writing encouraging words about joy. Yet he mentions a man who refreshed him. He goes on to say in verse 17, when he came to Rome, he eagerly searched for and found me. Allow yourself to get found. There's a a kid's game we play, hide and go seek. You remember that game where you send someone out and then they hide and everybody goes and gets found? There's also a game called Sardines. It might be called something else, but I'd heard of it called Sardines, where one person goes and hides. And then when you find that person, you hide with them. And then till the next person finds them, they hide with them. So eventually you're packed in there as sardines. Until the last person then finds you. You see, sometimes in life we play hide and go seek. And we should be playing the game of sardines. We play hide and go seek, and that we won't, you know, we'll send someone off, and then we may or may not search for. And then if we find them, then, well, you know, it's a new game. We move on. Versus finding someone and staying with them. And finding that group and staying with them. And finding that group and it gets bigger and staying with them. Onesiphorus searched for Paul. And this was no small task. And Paul mentions that he eagerly searched for. You see, in Rome at this time, Christians were not viewed as a good people. And some of the fiercest persecution of Christianity is beginning at this time. And we live in a country where we take freedom, the freedom to be able to gather together and to worship, so for granted. And while it exists in the world today where people are persecuted for it, Paul and other Christians were definitely being persecuted for it. So for Onesiphorus to find Paul wasn't just that he didn't have Google Maps, you know, he didn't have GPS technology. It wasn't about that he didn't have a phone book that he could look up and find the local prison and call and figure it out. It was about not having all of that, but also about putting his life on the line to go find Paul and refresh him. And so there's lots of things that distract us in life and we get busy with in life. And I'm guilty. Where the encouraging word isn't said, or the time finding isn't done, or the time getting together is taken for granted or put off for later. So let's work to not do that. To understand that time is precious, and to understand that sometimes seeking takes effort, and allow ourselves to get found. The Apostle Paul clearly appreciated. This is the Apostle Paul. I'm not the Apostle Paul. And he seems to appreciate being refreshed. Finally, in verse 18, he says to grant to him to find mercy for the Lord on that day, and you know very well what services he rendered. I don't know what services Onesiphorus rendered. Timothy knew. And what we understand is that the services Onesiphorus rendered, Paul knew, Timothy knew, They were known. And we don't render services to be known, but we should be rendering services that people are seeing and feeling and getting and understanding. My friend Don did not render that service to get any kind of acknowledgement. Don didn't come visit me so that years later I could come to him remembering that event. He didn't do it for any kind of accolades or prestige or anything. Nobody knew he did it. But it impacted me. A simple act of service. And so we can do the big stuff, and the big stuff is good. But don't underestimate the small stuff. Because in the small stuff, and at the core of that small stuff, is not me doing it, but God. It's not you doing it, but God. And I think sometimes we get afraid. I do, so I won't speak for you. But I get afraid of actually saying the prayer, use me as you see fit. Or do it your way. You know, other ways of saying your will be done. Because when we truly subject ourselves to God, to His will, to His teaching, to His desires, when we truly subject ourselves that way, I'm afraid sometimes of what might happen. And I don't have a good answer as to why. But the services Onesiphorus rendered, can I render that kind of service? You can render a service that impacts a person's life, even just a simple conversation. Don't underestimate the power of God in that simple service that is rendered. You see, we oftentimes think, well, you know, I'm not the Apostle Paul. And look what Paul did. Got in the face of people, wrote these powerful, actually didn't seem to be as cool in person as he was in his writings. But, you know, he stood up in the face of people. He wrote these books. He changed his life 180 degrees following God. Most of the New Testament is written by him. I'm not the Apostle Paul. Look at Timothy. He's going to take the torch from Paul. He's going to go on and continue to preach the gospel. And two books written from Paul to Timothy. I'm not a Timothy. I can be an Onesiphorus. Can you be an Onesiphorus? Simple acts of service, simple little everyday things. He's not mentioned anywhere else in Scripture. He didn't lead a people out of captivity. He didn't go up on the mountain and get the commands. He didn't bring anybody through a flood. He's not in prison for his own. There's no book written to him or for him or by him. He just was a friend of Paul. Jesus said in Matthew 11:28, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. The Greek word for rest is anapao. It means rest, take ease, refresh. I think that's kind of cool. Jesus says, come to me to be refreshed. And so as we say, well, you know, I don't know if I can even be an Onesiphorus. Yes, yes, you can. Because we have the Almighty Creator of the world behind us. Because we have Jesus Christ on our side. And so when we look to Him, when we work with Him, when we subject ourselves to Him, when we strive in our relationship with Him, we can be an Onesiphorus. The lesson is yours. And so as we enter back into the world later today and tomorrow, hopefully the life of a man named Onesiphorus can impact us, that we can see and know, that we can refresh people in everyday life, that we can search for and find those in need and allow ourselves to be in subjection to be found sometimes. And then finally to render simple acts of service. It doesn't have to be big and great ones. It can be, but don't take for granted the small ones. And whatever it is, continue to seek Jesus. Are you? Are you seeking Him? So that you stand before the acknowledgement of death and know that on the other side, I'm with Him. I'm with Him. We're going to sing a song of invitation. And if you want to give your life to him or need the prayers of the congregation, because we do need each other, then we invite you to come forward as we stand and sing.